Welcome back to the Sports Line. Rich Roth, Ed Lane rolling along with you, and we're joined now once again by famed sports psychologist Dr. Bob Rotella. He joins us once again on the Sports Line. Hey, Doc, how are you?
I'm just great. Just got back from the fun U.S. Open.
You know, it was certainly an interesting U.S. Open. You know, the scores were a little bit lower, I guess, is the right way to put it. I mean, you know, so far under par, it was a little bit unusual. Talk to me about your experience. What was it like for you being out there?
Well, I'm trying to get one of my guys to win, and we didn't. We've won 84 majors, but we didn't win that one. You know, Justin Thomas had a chance. Patrick Reed had a chance. Jim Furyk played pretty nicely. But, you know, the course was beautiful, but they just needed a lot more wind every day, and they didn't quite get it. And it needed the wind they had Sunday morning. TV didn't talk about it a whole lot, but about halfway through the round for the leaders, the wind pretty much died down to about 7 miles an hour or so. So, they just need a lot of wind every day. If they did, it would have been awesome. But it's still a great golf course. It was beautiful. And, they closed the course last September, October, so the conditions were perfect. It couldn't have been in better shape.
Dr. Rotella, a lot of folks have weighed in on the course itself. From a golfer's standpoint, what's their assessment of Erin Hills and, more importantly, how it impacted their ability to, you know, it seems like for a lot of them, play whatever style suits them best as opposed to conforming to the course?
Yeah, I think everyone, when they got there, you know, the first evaluation is that they have never seen fairways that wide in a U.S. Open. And I would say the last several Opens have been pretty playable, given how hard they used to be with really narrow fairways and really long grass. The last, you know, several haven't been like that. This one, the fairways were 60, 65 yards wide. You had to really hit it crooked to get in the deep stuff. But if the wind had blown, I think it would have been a really challenging course. But, you know, it favored a bomber for sure. I mean, I think most of the really long hitters who, when they miss, it can be pretty crooked, I think they were very happy when they saw it. And I think most people felt that it, you know, favored a bomber. But as it turned out, some bombers were up there and some players who weren't real long were up there. So, you know, it ended up being a good test. A beautiful course. I mean, no question about that.
What do you think the rationale was behind on making it so playable and, by U.S. Open standards, easy, right? I mean, I heard some people talk about the U.S. GA didn't want any more criticism, that they wanted to just kind of coast through this thing without, you know, too much drama or, I guess, criticism, again, is the word. Why so playable? Why so, again, easy relative to U.S. GA standards for this tournament?
Well, I won't even begin to pretend that I understand the USGA thinks. I don't know. But I'd say the last several have been pretty playable. I think the PGA's kind of gone in the same direction. Those two tournaments used to have really long rough and really narrow fairways and really rewarded accuracy. I would say everything in professional golf, for the most part in recent years, probably because of the result of television wanting, you know, more wide open golf courses, more playable shots, long hitters winning. It seems to be the direction they're going in. Now, the only explanation I've heard from players, I don't know if it's true or not, is golfers will watch TV golf no matter how it's set up. Non-golfers will only watch if there's lots of birdies and eagles. And so they're kind of moving in that direction because TV provides the money, but you know, I'm just hearing that from players. I don't really know the answer.
Interesting.
For athletes in sports, we know you work with a lot of different sports, Dr. Rotella.
Yep.
How much has the nature of television and the product it demands impacted the way athletes prepare themselves and how they end up, in a lot of cases, branding themselves as well? You know, we kind of saw some of this in the NBA with the evolution, positionless basketball, big men not wanting to play inside but rather playing outside. Just in a general sports sense, what's the impact been on TV with sports and athletes?
Well, I think TV's had a huge impact. I mean, I think every sport you go to, I mean, baseball, you know, they probably move the fences in, make the ball hotter when they want more home runs. I think football, the rules for the defensive backs, the tall receivers and just throwing the ball up high in the air has really changed the game. I think all the rules basically have favored more offense. And I think you see the same thing in golf. They basically made hitting it long and crooked more important than hitting it real straight and short. So I'd say length has become more important than accuracy in recent years. You still have to have a great short game. I think in basketball, if you look at the way they call fouls against guards or outside players versus the banging that goes on inside the lane, it's so different, it's incredible, which is really rewarding people for making threes. And, you know, the three-point shot has really brought the shorter player back into the game of basketball. But I think TV rules. They have a lot of control over what we watch. And, you know, some people are saying that, you know, all sports are slowly becoming World Wrestling Federation. In other words, they made fake wrestling more popular than real wrestling. And, you know, we're kind of we're changing all the rules in a lot of sports and the way we officiate them to make it better on television. And, you know, I don't like it, but, you know, it seems to be the way it's going because that's where the money's coming from.
Dr. Bob Rotella joining us here on the Sportsline, famed sports psychologist. Just a slew of books, many of them on golf. And, you know, golf is not a game of perfect, maybe the most noteworthy one. But, I mean, offering the tips that you talk with some of the most famous golfers and athletes, as Ed noted before, you know, out to the general public. And I guess, you know, I'm curious, do you think the general public, I mean, Joe Golfer, who, you know, goes out and plays, you know, every couple weeks or once a month, is the mental part of the game more important for them possibly than, you know, some of the most famous golfers in the world who are out there all the time? Or how do you see that relating? Because obviously for them, it's a way of life. For us, it's just going out and having some fun. But obviously the better you play, the more fun you have, right?
Well, first of all, you know, the pros spend a whole lot more time training and practicing and certainly have a teacher standing over them a lot more of the time than the average player. So that's the first thing, is their skills are better. Usually they're more physically talented and have an unbelievable level of desire and motivation. But if players want to play to their potential, in other words, if you can hit the ball a certain way in the practice area and you want to be able to play that way in a tournament, well, then the mental game is pretty much the same. It's just that your results might not be as good as the tour player. But there isn't a player on the tour who, to some degree, isn't a bit insecure out there. It's just a game of mistakes, and it tends to breed insecurity. And, you know, even the best players, most of the time there's a drop-off from their practice skills to their tournament skills. And I think you have to keep your mental, you know, game in at the right place in order to do that. And it's, you know, it's confidence, it's concentration, it's composure. Some of it's, you know, how thoroughly do you prepare. But at some point you got to go out there and trust what you've got. You know, but, you know, the bottom line is tour players are playing against other players who are better than scratch golfers, and amateurs are playing against other golfers who are somewhat similar to them in ability. Mm. So it's all about really learning how to play to your present ability and then over time getting your skills better. But if you get your skills better and you don't trust it, well, it won't do you any good to get your skills better because they won't show up in a tournament. It was interesting at the Open this year. It was fascinating. In the past, with narrow fairways, it was all about getting guys to trust their swing and to not guide and steer it. This last week, it was more about not getting sloppy on the tee because it's hard to find a target, and the fairways were so wide, the urge was to overswing. And you had to really work on guys on the discipline to swing within themselves and make sure they picked a target and a shot and just swung within themselves, which was interesting. You know, now when the wind came up Sunday morning, all of a sudden really committing to your shots and being patient was very different. And, you know, the other thing that came up Sunday is you can't start worrying what if the other half of the field doesn't get the wind. And that happens a lot in golf tournaments. And you just got to say, I got to take whatever I get and go play the best I can with it and be happy with it. And, you know, your point about is it easier to have fun when you're playing great? Probably the answer is yes. I try to get everybody to say, I know one thing, I'm going to have fun playing golf today. And if you say you love golf, well, then go out there and spend the whole day feeling like you're doing something you love doing. And if you only can enjoy golf when you're playing great, you probably won't play golf very long because it'll drive you nuts.
RDS for me. Renowned sports psychologist Dr. Bob Rotella joins us on the sports line. You referenced practice and how that impacts golfers. In some sports, guys are known as gamers. They may not put a lot into practice or practice as well, and then all of a sudden game day rolls around and they perform exponentially greater. How is golf relative to that? Is it similar for certain golfers, or is the nature of golf such that you almost have to put a lot into practice to get something out of it come the four rounds of the tournament?
No, I mean, I think you see guys in golf that are gamers that find it really hard to really get interested in practice, particularly if their game's in good shape. So I think it's one thing if you're working on your game when you're kind of lost. But there's a lot of players who, once they get it where they want it, you know, don't want to spend a whole lot of time beating balls and tend to play really well in competition. There are other guys who, no matter how good they get their skills, they keep practicing to the point of over-practice, and it's never good enough because they're always worried that it's not going to be good enough, and they're always worried they're not going to play good enough. And they tend to over-practice and then try too hard in the tournament, and they have to change that whole approach, that's for sure. It's such a game of skill. You know, like in football, there's a lot of great running backs who hardly ever practice running with a football. I mean, they take a lot of days off from practice. You know, it's more of an innate skill, I'd say. Golf is more like the quarterback or the kicker. I mean, you're doing a lot of skill development, and there's a lot of different shots in golf that you have to get good at. And I don't think there's anybody I've ever met in golf who's equally good at everything naturally. So, I mean, if you took, like, Tiger and Phil Mickelson, I'd say short game came to them a lot easier than their tee shots did. I'd say to this day they struggle with their tee shots. But their short game, you know, they've always had that. And, you know, if you're a golfer, that's a real good thing to have. You'd much rather be really good at short game than with your tee ball. But it'd be nice to be good at everything.
Doc, I've heard a lot of talk lately about the clutch gene, and some players just seem to really step up in big moments. Is that all mental? I mean, is there anything to the genetics of that type of thing? It would seem like no, but that it would be a kind of a mental thing, a guy who wants the ball and has enough faith and confidence in his abilities that he's going to get the job done, right?
Well, I mean, it's a good question and issue. I certainly think there are some people just born good at finishing or winning or playing well in competition. And I would say of the 84 guys I work with, most of them came to me because they were having trouble either winning or winning multiple times, or they'd won regular events, but they were having trouble winning majors, and they had to learn how to win at every level. But, you know, the easiest way to learn how to win would be to win at an early age, to win early on a regular basis against kids older than you, and do it in every age group you ever played in. That would be the easiest way to get confidence. And there's a small number of players who've had that experience. But the majority of players, you know, don't have that experience, and they have to learn to overcome it. And that's where you start finding out, you know, how badly do I want to become a great player, and how badly am I willing to admit that, you know, I'm getting in my way, I'm getting careful and trying too hard, which is easy to do when you've been spending your whole life working at it, and you have to learn how to do it. Sometimes it's learning to keep your composure. Sometimes you have to learn how to believe in yourself. Sometimes it's you have to learn a skill. So, I mean, they're all just, I look at the metal game as just a skill you have to learn like any other skill. And if someone says to me, well, I just think it's innate, I go, well, is it innate for you? And if it isn't, well, then you better learn how to do it. If it's innate for somebody else and not for you, who cares? So, I mean, that's the way I look at it. It's like if someone learns, just driving the golf ball comes naturally to them at an early age, I say, great, but how about you? Do you drive it good? Nope. Well, then you're going to have to learn how to drive it if you want to be a great player. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're just skills you have to develop. And why we tend to look at, you know, mental skills or emotional skills or composure or poise or grit any different than we look at any physical skill, I have no clue. But I think for a long time, you know, it was almost like a secret and no one wanted to talk about it because you didn't feel like you were a man or something. But I think the more people have understood positive psychology or the psychology of greatness that I teach, I think they realize there's nothing weird or strange about it. I'm just teaching stuff that great coaches have been talking about for 100 years. And it's really about confidence, concentration, composure, commitment, getting great mental and physical routines, and basically doing whatever you have to do to get whatever it is you want. I think too many people took abnormal psych classes in college, and it was all about abnormalities at the other end, and I've spent my whole life studying people who are already normal or above normal functioning and want to be great, and everything I teach is about the psychology of exceptionality. I mean, how to think better than normal people, how to think in exceptional ways. It's a very positive approach to how you go about your lifestyle.
Can you give us an example of that? Just one.
Well, I mean, like a classic would be blaming all of your problems on your mother or your father, or the way you were parented, or bad luck, or having a teacher that didn't believe in you. So, I mean, the first thing would just to decide, okay, I'm a big boy or girl now. I can't do anything about what my mom and dad did. But now, am I going to complain about that and spend my whole life treating myself the way my mom and dad did, even though I tell everyone I don't like the way they brought me up? Or am I going to say, well, now that I'm an adult, I get to choose how I think about myself, and I'm going to change how I've been brought up, and I'm going to think in a very different way? Or if you didn't have success in golf and you lost a whole lot of tournaments that you had a chance of winning and you kind of knew you blew them, and now I'm going to decide I'm going to learn how to win, and I'm going to change how I used to think when I was in position to win, and I'm going to get a lot better at it. And so you go out and you seek out knowledge and information on what the great ones do, and I'm going to learn how to do that. I mean, that's basically what it's about. Mm. Or someone who used to get really angry or feel sorry for themselves, they're going to have to learn to be stronger and to put their attention on what they want to have happen rather than what they're afraid might happen. Or, you know, basing your future on your past instead of basing your future on what you want to have happen in your future. So, I mean, if all you do is think the way you've always thought, you'll probably play the way you've always played. And you basically have to make a decision. And that's why in my books I talk about free will, personal responsibility, and personal accountability. If you don't want to accept the fact that human beings have free will, if you don't want to accept the fact that you're responsible for how you think about yourself because it's your brain and your emotions and they control your body, and you don't want to hold yourself accountable for it, well, then you'll make excuses. If you want to see how far you can go with the talent you got, then your job is to fall in love with your talent. If you spend your whole life loving everybody else's talent but not liking yours, well, then you're going to be very limited. So a lot of it is throwing away all limits about ability, about age, you know, and finding a way to win with what you've got.
Dr. Bob Rotella joining us here on the Sports Line, noted sports psychologist, works with a lot of golfers, great books available everywhere, you know, Google, Amazon, Doc, I want to get into a number of different things. We've already talked long enough. Would we be able to get you back on, you know, in a few weeks or a month or so? Because, you know, I want to look at kids and kids, you know, with psychologists and knowing, you know, what, for example, Tiger's dad did to him, some of the things he did, and, you know, other parents out there and the way kids sports is changing. Would we be able to catch up with you again in a few weeks or something to talk more?
Yeah, just call my wife, Darlene, and she'll help you find a time.
That'd be fantastic. We don't want to take up too much of your time, but we really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us once again, and we look forward to catching up again.
All right, good talking to you guys. Have a great day.
Thanks. Dr. Bob Rotella joining us here on the Sports Line. Again, Amazon.com got a whole bunch of books that are phenomenal for golf and other sports.
Fantastic insights. Just the mental game of sports. You know, I mean, it's funny because...
Well, but that's... It's life, too.
You know, it's how you approach it and think.
He relates it to sports, but it's, you know, it's the same thing, you know, moving forward. You know, you don't blame your parents or whatever, a teacher. I mean, he brought that one up. I mean, how many kids are like, how many kids are sitting there going, well, I'm not doing well in this subject because the teacher doesn't like me, or, you know, the teacher doesn't teach a way that I can relate. It's like, you got to overcome that. And, you know, it's the same thing. And he just deals with professional athletes, or not only professional athletes, works very closely with the athletes up at UVA, because he lives just outside of Charlottesville. So, you know, really fascinating guy. You know, it's funny. I was reading an article last week where Davis Love's son qualified for the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
And Love was caddying for him.
Signs are getting old, by the way.
Right, right. So, and Love didn't qualify, so he caddied for, you know, his kid. And he said, one of the first things I'm going to do when I get there is I'm going to have him sit down with Dr. Rotella. Just talk, you know, the mental aspect. It's gotten so important. So I'd love to catch up with him again. You know, maybe in another month or so around the British Open or something like that.
Be fascinating. And then, of course, you know, football season's coming and mm-hmm. youth sports, obviously, that could go at any point in time.
Yeah, there's so much to talk with a guy like that about. It's fun. Fun to get his perspective. But we are, unfortunately, out of time. You hear the music. So we're done for today. Got a big show coming up tomorrow. Jason LaConfora will join us, talk some Redskins, and a whole lot more.